All right, here we go. Everything okay in the booth? Yeah? Thumbs up? Okay? Oh, you're pointing at me. No, talent is always ready. If you're ready, I'm ready. All right, Market in the Book, episode 130. 130. Okay, three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. Let's do this thing. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode of this podcast is posted every Monday for your podcasting binge-worthiness. Your podcasting pleasure, I should say. Right there at WGNplus.com. I am Elton Jim, and thank you so much for joining us today for episode 130. As I said, not only are we on WGNplus.com, but on that said web site, there is also a landing page for this podcast. So go back on there, and you can find all previous 129 episodes. Just go to the entertainment section, hit Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and there you'll find all previous 129 episodes, which, as I said earlier, makes this one episode 130. That's right. I'm back. And welcome. Thank you so much for scrolling or for clicking or for whatever it does, whatever you do to find this on a weekly basis. Your time and loyalty and attention is much, much appreciated. So, this week, what I'd like to talk about is I went for my annual physical. And I think something that we all should do. We probably sometimes put it off more than we should. A trip to the doctor is always a little stressful. It seems to me, though, that that's more of something that men seem to put off than women. Women are much more health conscious, and they're much more in tune to going to see a doctor on a regular basis. And men usually go to the doctor when they have to. And I certainly, for much of my life, fell into that category. For many years, and I'm not proud to say it, really, I didn't even have a regular physician because I just never really was sick and I never really felt bad. And so I felt, well, why should I go? I don't know if that was necessarily a really good way of monitoring my health. I've been fortunate throughout my life in that I've never had anything overtly serious in terms of an ailment or a disease. So I haven't really had, as I said, much of the practical, I don't want to say connection, but, a relationship with a doctor, because as a young kid, I was always healthy I never got any of the childhood diseases. You know, I was I'm an only child. So I wasn't surrounded by brothers and sisters who were bringing home all these chicken pox and mumps and measles things from school. And even if we had, kids in school who had those, I guess my immune system was such that I didn't get them. So I didn't have any of those childhood diseases. So even those things at an early age, I wasn't used to going to the doctor unless I was really sick. So I remember going sometimes, had a bad cold or a bad fever and things like that. And I got my occasional shot here and there. But as I got older, throughout my teens and in my 20s and even 30s and even into my 40s, I really didn't have a regular doctor. And as I got into my mid-40s, I said, well, maybe it's time to get a doctor. And I did, and I'm very happy with him, and I've had him now for a while. And once again, thankfully, I haven't had anything major happen to me. I've had a few interesting, if anybody who listens to this podcast or has listened to me on the radio over any kind of period of time, knows especially the last 2 or 3 years ago, I had quite a few things happen to me that were odd but true. Thankfully, nothing overtly serious, something things that were always that were treatable. They were strange and why they were happening. And some of those are still kind of question marks. And so I did suddenly have to go see a number of different types of doctors, whether it was a general practitioner or a specialist. I had something called sudden hearing loss. I lost 90% of my hearing overnight in my left ear. And thankfully that was treated and I got all my hearing back. A lot of times that doesn't happen, but I did. So I'm thankful for that. I went right away. The one thing about me is I never used to go to a doctor. I always would make the joke, the body has its own healing processes, you know. There's sometimes that the body just can't heal something on its own. It does need some outside help. Because my wife always say, oh, you should go to the doctor. I'm fine. And as I said, my body seemed to heal itself. But there are times, and especially as you get a little older, sometimes, you know, things happen and you just can't fluff them off. So the one thing about me is that because I always have been healthy, when I do feel something that is not right, because I've become a pretty good gauge of my body, and I do listen to what it tells me. And when I get some weird pains that are not just aches and pains, and this isn't odd, and they last more than a couple of days, I do go to the doctor. That I've always done. As I said, thankfully, I haven't had to do that much in my life. So it's not that I'm adverse to doctors or like going, but it's almost that kind of thing. And I don't, but thankfully, I'm not the type that will wait until something gets terrible. You know, I do, if there's something that doesn't seem right, I go. And this hearing thing freaked me out. I went to the ear doctor. He said, I'm glad you came in, because if you waited a few more days, you might have just lost your hearing totally. So that was good to hear. And if you listen to me, and as I said, go to that landing page. I talked about this on some of my previous podcasts. A couple years ago, to cure that, not to freak you out or to make you wince, but I had to get 2 injections in my eardrum. It sounds worse than it is. Everything's numbed, but it is a long needle. And then about 4 or 5 months after that, I had a problem with my eye. I wasn't seeing correct. It was a weird kind of blurriness and clearness. It just didn't seem right. Once again, I waited a while, and then a couple of days, 3-4 days, and I'm like, this isn't right. I went to my eye doctor, and sure enough, he said, you've got to go to a retinal specialist right away. You've got something serious here, and you can lose your sight if you don't get this taken care of right away, which is kind of scary. Thankfully, I did. That is actually an ongoing thing. That's almost 3.5 years ago, and I don't want to make you wince again. But in addition to getting that shot in my ear, I still go every 7 to 8 weeks. I had a venal occlusion, which basically means that one of my veins was blocked, which then made it burst and leak. And then liquid got into my retina, which could have, you know, damaged my retina to the point where I would have lost my sight. But thankfully, I went quick. And now, like I said, hold on to your chairs. For the last 3.5 years, I still get it. And hopefully the eye is healing now on its own. This injection helps to relieve the symptoms. And that's exactly what I said, folks. I dropped that in to see if you were listening. Yes. I get an injection in my eyeball. I know. But I got this to tell you. It sounds a lot worse than it is. It's not something I look forward to. But I have to say, once again, modern medicine, my eye is numbed. Yeah, anything, as we know, around our eye is always kind of uncomfortable and freaky. But this takes, and I'm not exaggerating, maybe 5 seconds. Completely, and the whole thing from when the doctor walks in and says, we're going to do this thing, maybe 20 seconds. Boom, puts the thing over my eye, keeps something to keep my eye open. Boom, boom, gives me the injection. It's 2 seconds. And as I said, modern medicine, you got to love it. My eye is numbed. I don't even feel anything. So it's amazing. And from what I've been told, it has helped save my eyesight. So you can't beat that, and thankfully, hopefully it's getting better, and hopefully I won't have to continue these shots for much longer. But yeah, that's something that I've been doing on a regular basis. I've had a lot of crazy things happen, as I said then, if you just to go through it. 2015 was a tough year from the health. I was getting hit from all sides. Then after that finally calmed down, I was in a play, and I literally fell off the stage during the show. Fell off the stage thanks to a misplaced prop. And I didn't rip it or tear it. Or I guess I didn't rip it. I didn't sever it completely, but I did tear my Achilles tendon. And so that was a huge deal. That was about a two and a half, three month ordeal with casts and walking boots and physical therapy. Yeah, I'm trying to think. That was about a good 7 or 8 month odyssey. But thankfully that healed. And so I've been lucky in that, as I said, I've taken care of things when they have gone wrong. And as you get older, I mean, you know, you just have to, you know, you have to go. So I have a yearly physical now, like I'm supposed to. And thankfully, as I said, you know, some general aches and pains, but nothing major or, you know, scary. So, you know, for people that are adverse to going to doctors, and I said mostly a lot of guys out there, get over it, because you'd be surprised. I mean, one thing that I do have is a lingering problem, and I'm not surprised that I have it. My parents both had high blood pressure, hypertension, and so that I do have, and I've been taking medication now for about a year or so, and that seems to be under control, and that will play a major part in later on in this story, so stay tuned for that. The blood pressure and its treatment will... So I'm just dropping you some crumbs here as we lead on. But I would just say to anybody out there, especially if you're getting a little older in your 40s or 50s, get a doctor, get someone that you like, someone that you trust, and go on a regular basis, because there you'd be surprised what's going on in your body that you don't have any way of knowing. Some things are obvious, and I've had some obvious things happen, and that's when I've taken care of them. But a lot of times, there's a lot of stuff going on inside that we don't know sometimes. It's not visible to the eye, and it's not creating any problems initially. And yeah, I know it's a battery of tests, and believe me, I've had my share of tests last year when I went for my physical. I felt fine, but the doctor noticed that there was some microscopic traces. So once again, could not see them with the naked eye, microscopic, and nothing overtly, dangerous, but still not the way it should be. He found some blood in my urine. And so I went through for about 4 or 5 months. I went through more tests, which I guess is, which you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it was a pain in the butt, no pun intended. And that was another thing I had done last year, too. The good old colonoscopy. Oh, happy to say my colon's clean, and it was well clean, too. They said it was nice job on the prep for that. I was happy to hear that I did a nice job on that. Little gold star. Hate to tell you where they put it, but... but anyway, so yeah, I was poked and prodded, and there I had cameras. Last year, 2017, I had cameras put in almost every orifice that I had. And I mean every orifice, front and yes, back, but yes, front. And by that, I mean for a male. That's not pleasing. But one of the tests you have to take when you go to the urologist, you know, if they have to check your bladder, and there's only one way to check your bladder for guys, and that's through that hole. Yeah, once again, I haven't had anything serious, but I certainly have had my share of tests that have been uncomfortable, to say the least. And that one was okay, but there was a few moments of uncomfort in it. That's definitely an orifice that is supposed to just export, not import anything. But thankfully, all the serious things, possibly cancer of your bladder, cancer of your, you know, problems with your kidneys, everything checked out. But it was about 4 or 5 months of different tests and ultrasounds and scans, and as I said, actual scopes into openings that were not meant to have scopes in them. And so, yeah, the last 3 or 4 years, I have it's been a very interesting odyssey. I still consider myself relatively healthy, but I have had to have several tests. And they were not pleasant, but they were necessary. So this is, I said, at the end of the day, everything was fine, and that's great. But, you know, while you're waiting for the results of these tests, you're always a little on edge. But and then to round things off last year, I had all these tests. I also had a growth on the outside of my hand, which we weren't sure what it was. So my doctor decided to remove it and then had it tested. Turned out, that's just my luck. Not good thing, wasn't anything serious, no melanoma or anything like that, any kind of skin cancer, anything serious. And not only was it not serious in that respect, it wasn't serious at all when the test came back. It was determined that didn't even need to be removed. It would have gone away on its own. So now I have this, I had a good 6 stitches there to take that off. Thankfully, the scar is gone. I mean, the scar is there, but it's not prominent or protruding. I know it's there. I guess if you look close and I make a fist, you can see it. It's right on one of my knuckles, right below one of my fingers there. So if I make a fist, I could see it. But yeah, I mean, you know, it did completely destroy my once lucrative hand modeling career. Me and George Costanza. Now I am marked. That's an official phrase in the hand modeling business, marked. If you've got any kind of imperfections, you're marked. So now I'm marked. And so it was once a very profitable and lucrative sideline. I'm sure you saw my hand in many Rolex print ads. But now I'm marked. I have this scar. So there goes that. And it didn't even need to happen. But that happened last year. And I'm just joking about the hand modeling gang. but now it's ruined. If I wanted to get into the hand modeling world, now I can't because I have this imperfection. Although I don't think I could have ever become a hand model. Yeah, I've got not dark, but you know, some hair on the upper part of my hands and on some of my knuckles. Although, as I've said to you many times, my palms are beautiful. My palms are as soft as a baby's butt. Not a hint of a callus. That comes from many decades of a lack of physical labor, and I'm very proud of that. But yeah, and then of course I ended up my 2017. I had this little hand thing that was done in the office, but still I had my regular battery of eye shots. I had all these tests for this possible blood in the urine, which turned out to be nothing. And I guess after that, my doctor said, well, you know, after we rule out all the possible serious things, we do find that some people just have a trace amount of urine in their blood from somewhere. And we just monitor that. And we may have to take some tests in a couple years just to make sure it's not getting any worse. But we sometimes just don't find out where it's from. Well, you should have told me that. I mean, I still would have taken the test, but you know, you get worried whenever it's, oh, what could it be? I mean, you look it up online. We all self-diagnose now. We all go to WebMD and, you know, oh, blood in the urine. Oh, that could mean cancer. So you get all afraid, but thankfully everything worked out. But, and of course I ended my 2017. Why should this be any different? I got a weird infection somewhere in my right foot. And it blew up to at least twice or three times its size. It was huge. I have Fred Flintstone feet to begin with. So it's hard to tell anyway if my feet are swollen or not. A lot of people joked, how could you tell your foot was swollen? Well, it's kind of true. Until you saw the picture. And when I walked in after some of the swelling went down, after I went to the emergency because it was going to burst, I went to my regular doctor and they had given me some antibiotics for about a week. And then I went to see him and he said, whoa, that foot's really swollen. I said, it was worse than that. He's like, well, this thing has still got some work to do here. So that was about a month of antibiotics just to kill that infection, whatever that was. And then, of course, I ended the year not only with the swollen foot in November, but just before the new year, we went on a nice little trip, and I came home with pink eye. My eyes. Thankfully, it wasn't an extreme case. It wasn't closed. It wasn't all messy with infection. It was just my eye was a little swollen and it was pink. It didn't really hurt, but it was, you know, it was definitely swollen. Once again, modern medicine, unbelievable. I went to my eye doctor, gave me a pill at 11 in the morning. By 3, my eye was clear. and the swelling was gone. It's amazing. We live in a great time, folks. Take advantage of the medical capabilities, the medical knowledge that we have, because about 100 years ago, people died from a toothache. And now, many times, a shot and a pill, and you can get rid of something that potentially could be very dangerous. So, yeah, you know, the going to the doctor is always stressful. We don't like it. We're afraid what we're going to hear or what we're not going to hear. And men, as I said, especially, they don't like to hear the bad news. But you know what? The only way you can get treat something that can, is potentially dangerous is to find out you have it. And then you just become an adult and you face it and you do the treatments that are necessary. And unless it's something very, very serious and dangerous, you know, odds are that you will get through it. There's a little uncomfortable, you know, it's a little uncomfortable for a while, but you get through it. And I am certainly a poster boy for that. As someone who didn't go to doctors for a while now, I realize the importance, as I said, the key is to know your body. And when you're not feeling something and it lasts for more than a couple of days, yeah, you know what? It's better to hear everything's okay than, geez, I wish you would have come in a lot sooner. So anyway, I went to my yearly physical. And I actually delayed it by a few months just because I was so poked and prodded last year. I wanted to give myself a break. I was in so many doctor's offices you know, hospital tests that I can go. So I actually went, it was about 16 months as opposed to 12, but I was feeling okay. I said, I'd take my blood pressure pills. So I was feeling fine. It was quite a year. My doctor and I sort of went over the things. Oh, that's right. And he starts looking at my, oh, that's right. That's, you had that. Oh, yeah. Wow. That was kind of a. So I said, yeah, I've been feeling okay now. And like I said, I've been taking my blood pressure medication, which is kind of the main topic of the podcast today. So I go to see the doctor, and I'm one of these guys that I'm always hot. You know, you hear the term hot-blooded. I've always been warm. My feet especially, always hot. If I go to a hotel room or anytime, if I'm in a bed under covers, I have to have my feet out because my feet are burning. And I'm also a guy from a young kid who always sweat a lot. I just always sweat. I was always active in sports, so I was always playing and running around, and even the positions that I played in sports. In baseball, I used to be a catcher, so I used to wear all the equipment, so that used to make me sweat more. And when I played hockey, I played a goalie. I had all that equipment on, so I always sweat a lot. You know, you play football, you got all that equipment on, you always sweat. Even when I played basketball in grammar school and in high school, I was always running around sweating. So I was always, I used to sweat at the thought of sweating. That's how much I sweat. One year, my wife and I went on a vacation in July to Philadelphia and Washington. We wanted to be, you know, very patriotic, go to the seats of our democracy, Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. Well, you don't go there in the middle of August, gang. I didn't even know that Washington, D.C. is basically built on a swamp, and swamps are not, you know, cooled, especially in the summer in humidity. Oh, we walked around for 3 or 4 days, especially in Washington, D.C. in August. It had to be 100% humidity as well as 100% temperature. I was walking around for 3 days as we went sightseeing with a towel from the hotel room. I carried a towel with me. That's how much I was sweating. Oh, my God. I remember one time about 10 years ago, I had a job interview, and I made the mistake of going out and having a lunch al fresco outside before my interview at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And it was a hot July day once again. And oh my God, talk about my shirt was drenched before the, and I saw it, I guess I had a lighter pastel colored shirt on. And oh my God, I mean, I was just drenched. Before the interview, I did my best. You know, when you go in the bathroom, you have the hand blower to dry your hands off. I was literally drying. I was underneath it trying to dry my shirt off for these unsightly stains. As I think I've discussed, that's one reason why I don't wear color. I wear black shirts a lot, especially in the summer. People say, why do you wear a black shirt? It's so hot. You know, wear a light shirt. Yeah, I know. But see, I sweat a lot. And then there's going to be all these sweat stains, and you don't want to see that. So at least a black shirt can camouflage that. So that's why for about the last 10 years, I've really been wearing black quite a bit, especially all the time, and especially in the summer, because of that. Of course, this summer, I learned my lesson. I decided not to wear my black shirt one day. We went to New York in August when it was 100% humidity. We were walking around Central Park, and oh my gosh, I was sweating. And oh, it was. The only thing I was happy about is that ultimately, the T-shirt that I had on, it was like a navy blue shirt. Thankfully, as the time went on, I was so sweated that the shirt was completely drenched, and so at least it looked one color. It was a shade darker than it was, and it was purely wet, but at least it wasn't splotchy. And I broke my personal rule of not wearing, I don't know why I did it that day, but I'm not doing it ever again. That's why I wear black shirts. Not only do I think it's cool, but it also helps for my sweating problem. However, and here we go. Here's one of the main reasons why I want to talk about today. Or do I sweat as much as I used to? Or do I? Because here's the thing. As I said, I take this medication for my blood pressure. One of the pills that I take is some kind of a beta blocker. I don't know what that means, but I do know is that ultimately this pill helps to slow my heart down a little from beating. Apparently, I have a lot of adrenaline in my system. I'm a go-getter. What can I say? You know, everybody talks about, drugs. I've never taken any drugs. I've never felt the need. I've got my own internal energy. So I've never really needed the need to. I don't take caffeine. I never drink coffee at all. Yeah, folks, this is me without caffeine. Could you imagine? So I guess I have a lot of adrenaline pumping through my veins, a lot of testosterone. That's when you are a macho, masculine guy like myself, that's the burden that I carry. I have so much testosterone. I'm so macho. I'm such a man. Anyway, I think I obviously have a lot of adrenaline. My body overheats, and that's why you sweat, right? But I've noticed in the last year, especially in the last 6 or 8 months that I've taken this pill, I'm not sweating as much. And remember I told you about my feet? My feet are not warm anymore. They're actually cold. And I'm actually more cold just around the house. Now, if anybody listens to me with any regularity, whether we're on the radio or here on the podcast, you know that when it comes wintertime, you know, I'm not one of those people that keep the house at 75. No way. First of all, that meter spins like it's cutting cheese or slicing cheese, pardon the expression. And so, that bill comes and it's like, whoa, you know what? I could do without $200 worth of a gas bill. So I'm not exaggerating. Even now, we have our thermostat stat. It's set at 60. I know that's even illegal. If I was renting out my house to somebody, I think you have to, it's at least legal, you have to provide 63 degrees of thermostat. I have 60 in my house. And I always tell my wife, and some people have felt sorry for her, but it's the burden of living with an Elton Jim. This is something that you have to withstand. In the winter, you can always layer. It's difficult in the summer. You can't take it. There's only so much you can take off. But in the winter, if you're cold, you can layer. You can have sweatshirts and T-shirts and hooded sweatshirts and sweatpants and socks and many socks and blankets. And you can be warm. And then if you're feeling too warm, you can always de-layer. So to me, and as I said, always being someone who was a little hot-blooded or warm all the time, When it's 60 or 64, I'm delirious. It's just too hot for me. Or at least it was, I'm finding. Even though I'm still not going to turn that thermostat up, because then I have to live by my own edict and layer myself. And I'm going to have to start to do that because I'm so used to being warm even in the winter, even when the house is a little chilly, I'm still comfortable. And I wear shorts and a t-shirt around the house, even in the winter. But I'm even noticing now that I'm getting cold and my feet are not as hot as they used to be. So I asked the doctor when I went for my physical recently, you know, I'm noticing you told me that one of these pills for my blood pressure is slowing down my heart from not pumping as fast. Is that one reason why I'm not, because I notice I don't sweat anymore. And I certainly I do sweat sometimes, but not like I used to. And only in the most extreme measures. This summer in Chicago, it was, we had a string of 90 degree days. And that's one reason why I'm not a hot weather guy, because I've always been uncomfortable in the real hot weather, especially of the humid 90s kind of Chicago weather. But this year, I don't like the heat, but I wasn't sweating like I usually was. And even when I would be going out and doing some activities, even just going out in the yard and doing some different things, I would usually be drenched. And yeah, I sweat a little, but not like I used to. So I asked him, I said, is it one reason from, you know, a side effect of this pill that I'm not sweating? Is that? And he goes, well, yeah. He said, you know, sweat is your body's way of cooling yourself off, and you don't need to be cooled off because your body isn't warm. This pill is slowing your heart down, so you're not feeling that kind of pressure, that kind of heat. And I said, well, I could feel this. I mean, yeah. I said, so I think this is great. If this is a side effect that you never mentioned, but I'm digging that. And so, you know, obviously the hope, the long term, is that I will be, you know, with a little more exercise and diet and things like that, that I will be slowly weaned off this medication. I mean, I don't think this medication, I mean, the goal, you don't want to take medications for the rest of your life, you know, but at least this medication is helping regulate my blood pressure. But the goal is obviously to be slowly weaned off of these. And that is my goal. But I have to say, while I'm on it, I'm digging one of these side effects of the no sweat. I mean, you know, those pills that you see, all these medications you see advertised on television, half the time, you know, it's for an ingrown toenail, but then they give you the side effects, and it you know, includes dying. You're like, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe it's a small ache and pain, the small arthritis pain, worth, you know, the loss of a kidney, which is one of these side effects that they're reading off, you know, so fast you could barely hear it. But I guess legally they have to say it. But I'm finding that my blood pressure medication, this one pill, is actually a great side effect. I'm not sweating like I used to. I'm not unsightly. It's not embarrassing. It was always uncomfortable, yes, and always just embarrassing to be always patting yourself off and sweating. And people say, wow, you're really sweating. I mean, like I said, I used to sweat at the thought of sweating. That's how much I sweat. But suddenly, no sweat at all. So I got a kick out of this. His nurse was in the doctor's office taking some blood, and I was asking him about. I was telling him this what I was noticing, how I wasn't sweating, and I said, "So, you know, if we do begin to wean off of these blood pressure pills, which one would you take me off first?" And he said, "Well, you know, probably this beta blocker one, the one that's slowing your heart down, because that's probably, you know, the most, the strongest." So we would try to get you off of that one first, or these other ones that, you know, are a little less powerful, and hopefully you wouldn't need is something that strong. And I said, well, wait a minute, though. We got to rethink this, because A, that thing's working to keep my blood pressure down, which is good, but B, I'm digging not sweating. So we might have to think about that. And I said, as a joke, and the woman was taking my blood and she had her head down, you know, the nurse, and I said, because we have to also, not only the practical part of it, I'm not even sweating, but from a financial standpoint, do you realize the money that we're saving on a monthly basis in detergent costs? I don't have to wash my shirts as much as I used to. I would have to, I mean, I could never wear a shirt 2 days, you know, after one day, it was pitted out. But we're saving money on washing. So this is a physical and a financial boon for me. So we have to think twice about taking me off of this in the long run, if it's not dangerous to take it for a long period of time. Because I got to tell you, Doc, I'm digging not sweating. And, you know, saving a little coin at the same time. Whatever this pill is, yeah, thumbs up. I'm not happy that I have high blood pressure, but this pill is killing two birds with one stone, so I'm digging it. So we might have to hold off. Whoa, let's slow down. Let's not be too anxious to take me off of this pill if we don't have to, because I'm digging not sweating. And I had to say, the nurse, when I said this joke about the detergent savings, you know, she was just sort of not, you know, pretending, I guess, not to pay attention. She's being very diligent on, you know, taking the blood. And then when I said that, she kind of looked up and gave me this look like, are you for real? She doesn't really know my sense of humor. The doctor knows it by now, and he kind of laughed. But she, at first, and then she realized it was a joke, but she sort of gave me this look like, what? So I was happy. I got a laugh out of a tough audience. So it was overall a pretty good doctor visit. So far, so good. We'll see how the blood tests come back. But so far, so good. Nothing serious. And still some of that microscopic blood in the urine, but we're not overly worried about that at this point. So we'll see what happens. As I said, it's not visible to the eye. It's not like, oh my God, look at that. You know, it's just something somewhere. I mean, think about all the little spots in the body. So somewhere something's leaking, but hopefully it's not uncommon. But yeah, so I was happy to get a nice laugh out of the nurse. And I was also happy to confirm my diagnosis, because I'm noticing how I'm not sweating. And I'm like, it's got to be this, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, it was... you know, I wasn't feeling anything overtly bad. So, yeah, this wasn't a bad physical to go to. But so I got to, we'll see. As I said, hopefully everything's okay with the blood and we're all set. And we made the appointment for next year. And as it stands, I'm still on my no sweat. I'm actually not even talking about it as blood pressure medication. I refer to it as my no sweating medication. So we'll see. We may actually save some money in the winter as well, because I'm not going to be overly hot, but I will layer. I have to live by my own edict, right? I have to start layering too. I mean, it's only fair. If I make my wife do it, I should do it too, right? And yes, when we have company over, I do turn on the heat for the company. Yes, I do. But I have to tell you, I'm dizzy, because I put it up to like, you know, 68 or 69, and I'm dizzy. I'm swirling. But so here's the other part that my little visit to the doctor for my physical turned out to be much more helpful than I ever thought, and enlightening and encouraging. So on the health front, everything, you know, pretty good. Feeling good about that. So I'm just about to leave, and I go, oh, wait a minute, Doc. I need your professional advice on this. So, of course, you know, he likes to hear that. What doctor wouldn't, right? So I'm going to audition soon for a play. The play is called WIT, W-I-T. It was an award-winning play, and it's about a woman that goes through her treatment for ovarian cancer. And so one of the roles, the role that I would be auditioning for is the role of her doctor, of her cancer doctor, her oncologist. And so I was given some scenes to look over before the audition to get familiar with. And as I said, this is a medical doctor, and he's going to be using some medical terms. And so I'm looking over this one scene, and my gosh, in one of the lines that I have to say, at least for this audition, and ultimately if I got the role, there is a, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-letter word. It's some kind of a medication or a treatment. It's a chemotherapy treatment of some kind. 18 letters. So I don't know. I mean, if this was there, obviously it's there because it needs to be said in the play, but I'm wondering if for the audition, if they gave the people auditioning for this doctor role this scene purposely to see how well they can pronounce and be comfortable with saying these medical terms, some of them, you know, 18-letter words filled with, you know, more consonants than vowels. And some of this looks almost Russian, you know, the way that Russian writing looks, I mean, with strange upside-down letters. So here's the word, 18 letters. Hexamethofosafosil. Hexamethofosafosil. How about that? I'm kind of impressed that I was able to say that so fast myself. But I wanted to make sure I was pronouncing it correctly. So when I go to the audition, I say it correctly. And then if I got the role, obviously, I want to say it correctly because I'm playing a doctor who would certainly say it the right way. And, you know, in terms of being a credible actor and playing the role, what if there's a doctor in the audience? If you say it wrong and he'll go, oh, or he or she will go, well, you know, that actor didn't know how to say it right. It's really hexamethofosafosil and he said it wrong. So I wanted to make sure. And then there was another word, vinplatin, V-I-N-P-L-A-T-I-N. I wasn't sure if it was vinplatin or vinplatin. I wanted to get the right pronunciation with the right accents on the right letters or syllables so that if I got the role or even in the audition, I would say it correctly and at least that would might give me a leg up. And yeah, at first I did try to go online. They have those pronunciation sites that you can go on and type in a word and they give you the pronunciation, which is great. But I'm finding more and more of those are now pay. I remember, you know, several years ago, you could find one, you just go on and type in a word and it gave it to you. Now, it's all, you have to pay for it. Those free days of the internet are slowly going away, folks. But so I'm like, I'm not paying for the pronunciation of this. So then it dawns on me, like before I go to my my physical, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not sure how to say this, and I can't find it on the internet, but wait a minute. I'm going to an expert. I'm going to a doctor. So I'm going to bring this script with me, this small scene, and I'm going to ask my doctor, how do I say that word? I'm going right to the source and ask the horse, right? So there's these two medical terms, these two medicines. And one thing I've been very impressed with my doctor ever since I've gone to him for the last 10, you know, 8 or 10 years or so is that he really knows his medications. I mean, he rattles off these medications and he just goes into, I could see I'm sure when he took the test to be a doctor that he did very well on the medical and the prescription section of the test. I'm sure he did. Because he rattles off the names of medicines without any problem, like you and I say cat or dog. And he knows, well, you can't use this with that. I mean, he really knows his stuff. I could just see it. He knows it. And I could see he likes it. And he proved it to me with this. I learned a little something about my doctor, thankfully. It had nothing to do with diagnosing me, but I learned a little more and I felt a little more confident. I always liked him and I felt he was a confident, you know, competent doctor. But I saw a new side of him thanks to my little question here. And I knew that he and I have a nice enough relationship that I knew that he wouldn't look at me cross-eyed if I asked him on how to pronounce this. I mean, that's part of the burden of being a friend of mine. You sort of have to put up with some of my quirks here, right? So as I'm walking out, I go, oh, wait a minute, doctor. I just have one quick thing. So I explain I'm in this play, the name of the play. And, you know, so I show him the thing. I said, here's the word. How would you say that word? So he says, well, that would be, wow. He said, well, that's some word. He says, yes, I have heard of it. Now, without even knowing, he said, well, that's a cancer drug, isn't it? I said, well, yeah, that's, the play is, you know, about a woman with ovarian cancer. He says, well, that's, that would be, you know, hexamethofosafosil. I said, so the one thing I was most worried about, obviously what I said was about the different accents, but was that the last part of it, the P-H-A-C-I-L. Fasafasil. I didn't know if it'd be fasafe, you know, fasafasil or sile. I wasn't sure. So I want to make sure. I thought it would be safasafil, but I didn't know. But he did say, yeah, it would be fasil, P-H-A-C-I-L. You would say that fasil, not fasile, Facil, it's Facil. Okay, cool. And then I said, well, there's this other one, Vinplatin. And he said, well, that's a cancer drug too, but it's Vinplastin. There's an S. There should be an S in there. And I said, oh, well, I don't know. I said, you know, that's what it says. He said, well, that's strange. So he gets on his tablet, and now he starts typing it in, and he sees, and he said, what's, you know, he goes, well, there's the hex word. I said, yeah. He goes, well, there it is. Yeah. And he goes, but this, you know, this Vinplastin, that should be an S. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm like, look, I'm not going to say the S because it's not there. And so the people in the play, I mean, they're going to say, why did you put an S in there if they're questioning that? So I'm just going to say, I said, well, as long as it's a short A, is it Vinplatin? If it's Vinplastin, then I assume it would be Vinplatin without the S. So he says, yeah. He says, but that bugs me. I don't know why it says Vinplatin. He says, what's the name of this play? And I said, Wit. So now he hits Wit, and he goes, is this it? So he shows me the screen. I said, yeah. He goes, and when Wit came up, I don't know what else he put in the search engine, but there came, you know, hexamethofosfosil and Vinplatin right there. He goes, well, here's the two underneath the play. There's the two words. I said, well, there they are. And he goes, well, now that's strange because it says Vinplatin there. It doesn't say Vinplastin. And I'm like, Well, I clearly tapped in to his medical, you know, inquisitiveness. And it was so cool to see because we were now past my diagnosis. You could see, and this is why this guy is obviously a doctor. His curiosity was piqued by this medical term that he didn't think was correct, or what is this? Because he'd never seen that one before. He thought it was something else. So he was initially, you know, taken by that. And then he was wondering, you know, why, you know, what is this? Where did it come from? And his natural curiosity, his natural determination, his natural, you know, drive to find an answer was clearly tapped into by this. This has nothing to do with my diagnosis, has nothing to do with my visit. But here's a little medical question that piqued his interest, and it was fascinating to watch him at work here to the point where he almost got distracted. My appointment was over, right? This was a little throw-in as I'm walking out the door. Hey, could you just help me say this? And I figured he'd say, oh, yeah, that's Vinplatin, and then we'd walk out and no problem. But this, you could see, piqued his interest to the point where he, while we were still now talking about the next steps, yes, keep taking this. I just re-upped your prescription. I'm sending that over to the pharmacist, and you know, we're taking blood, and here's what we're testing for with the blood. I even had to ask him for that. He got so, you know, the nurse is taking my blood, and I see him down with his computer, with his tablet, and he's keep hitting these buttons. And now I'm asking him questions because I always ask my doctor questions. I think it's my right, and I think we should know what he's doing. You know, we doctors are certainly the experts here, but we also have every right to ask them what's going on, what are the risks, why are you doing this, what's happening, what happens if I don't. You know, if you don't ask your doctor that, I think you're not being fair to yourself. Because it is your body. You have every right to know. You just don't, you know, put them on a pedestal. You need to find out what's happening, and then you can make your own decisions. And even if you come manned with, you know, information you may have gotten from the internet, and I'm sure doctors are getting used to people coming in at least with a little more information than they used to. But hey, you know what? That keeps them on their toes. That keeps them honest. They are in not only the healing business, but they are in the customer service interest business, correct? Right? They're there to not only treat you, but treat you nice. Treat your ailments, but also treat you nice. To answer your questions, to lessen your fears or your anxieties about something that you might have, and your pains. And you're so, I think it's good that we start to be a little more communicative with our doctors, and hopefully they understand that, and my doctor certainly is. So that's why I didn't feel weird asking him how to pronounce, even just pronounce, you know, hexamethofosfosil. And yes, I am saying that out loud many times just so I can get used to it. So when I go to the audition, it'll be like second nature to me. But I'm testing it out on you, folks. But so, I mean, I was having to ask him, so now what are these blood tests for? And you could see he was like, what? Oh, yeah. And I could see that he goes, oh, you know, finding out all that stuff, you know, it's now I have to go through all these pages on my computer. So he was totally researching this Vinplatin thing to find out why it was not Vinplastin, to the point where I almost had to get him back on track about my own health. But part of me, I could see he was distracted, but I was also very impressed at how he was determined to find this answer, that suddenly there was something that he didn't know and he wanted to know it. He wanted to find the answer. And I'm like, well, that's good. I like to see this in my doctor, because there may come a time when I've got something and I need him to just be just as focused and just as curious and just as determined to find the answer, just like he was when he ordered all those batteries of tests to find out about the blood in my urine. I was kind of like, geez, do we have to take all this testing? He was like, yes, we do. And I could see why he felt that way, just because of this little thing from my play. He was consumed because there was a mystery out there. And in many ways, that's what doctors are too. You know, they are like health detectives, right? If you think about it, I mean, that's really what they are. And so I came away from this year's physical confident in my health, which was great, but I also had a new appreciation for my doctor. And I saw a side of him that I had never seen before, but I'm glad I did, that he was tenacious. He wanted to find out what Vinplatin was and why it wasn't Vinplastin. And gosh darn it, he was going to find that out. It was going to take him all day. And for all I know, after I left, he was still looking at it. So the takeaway from today is, A, don't be afraid to go to the doctor. B, don't be afraid to talk to your doctor in a conversational, inquisitive way. It's your health. And C, in the words of Bill Cosby, which is not always the best person to quote these days, I understand, if you're not too, what is it? If you're not too careful, you just might learn something. And I learned something about my doctor. Every so often, it's nice to give him a little pop quiz. And so, that ends another episode, number 130 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com for your podcasting and binge-worthy pleasure. As I always say, thank you so much for your loyalty and finding this podcast on a regular basis. I hope you enjoy it. I certainly love doing it, because I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. And this is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. And one more time, that's hexamethofosfosil. 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 Hexamethofosfosil.